Hey, Perf Bites listeners, before you get started on today's episode, we'd like to mention the generous support of our sponsor, Flood.io. Imagine your load test plan runs great with just 10 threads, but now you need 100,000 users. Distributed load testing seems like a good idea, right? But now you're wrestling with out-of-memory errors and blocked RMI ports, and your load generators outnumber the target servers for JMeter. You are throwing knives in the dark with limited feedback and mandrolic reporting. Say hello to Flood.io. Launch Flood Test using JMeter or Gatling, view and share test results in real time, scale out your own grid across the globe in minutes. Flood.io, distributed load testing for everyone.
It's time for Perf Bites.
What the f*** is Perf Bites? The fourth square meal of the day. Simple like Perf Bites. Waffles. Microwave ready. Blobbity blah. Blobbity blah. Add nutritional value to your brain.
It's time for Perf Bites with your hosts Mark Tomlinson and James Pulley.
Perf Bites.
Whatever.
Hey, here we go with another Perf Bites episode for this week on American Top Podcast, the best-selling, most-played shows from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from Canada to Mexico. This is Mark Tomlinson in Philadelphia with my co-host James Pulley all the way down south in North Carolina. And in the next 3 hours, we'll count down the 40 most popular performance tips in the United States this week. Hot off the forums and LinkedIn, SQA forums, Facebook, Stack Overflow for the week ending July 11th, 1970. In this first half hour, number 43 is scalability and estimation in the countdown, a topic that's been a hit 4 different times in 19 years, and we're just one topic away from the Perf Tester of the Year with $10,000 in gold hubcaps on his car. Now, on with the countdown.
Number 43, scalability and estimation.
Yeah, James. Hey, it's time for Perf Bites. That was a little bit that's a shout out to some people might not know Casey Kasem, famous broadcaster and owner of the American Top 40, has what would you call it, bizarre circumstances, he's gone missing or not really missing, but sort of.
I think with everyone else in the world who's grown up listening to Casey over the years, he's missing, so if you've seen Casey Kasem, call the police, please.
Wouldn't it be ironic if they actually got the Scooby-Doo and the gang to go find Casey Kasem? Because
you know, I really want to laugh like Scooby right now, but I just can't pull that off.
I can't. I can't pull that off either.
Yeah.
I'm going to edit that out.
Yeah.
But yeah, jinkies. Exactly. So, James, welcome. How are you doing? Welcome to episode 43. Who knew 43 would be? Here we are, 43 episodes later.
Mark, it is summer already in the Carolinas. It's a blissful 85 degrees. It's sunny outside. It's low humidity. The grass is growing. The birds are tweeting. Everybody is happy. And it's time for a great topic on Perf Bites.
It's actually a really great topic because this comes up. I remember you and I were at out in Beaverton, Oregon with the exciting athletic apparel people. We were talking with Terry, who's sort of the tech ops lead guy. And he was one of the actually strongest advocates for pointing out performance being crappy. And he remember standing in front of his desk and he was pointing at some like response time or some curve on the graph and just basically saying, this, look at this, just take this is not scalable.
And what he was really looking at is how resources were being consumed, Mark, and he could project that out as user load increased, how much that curve was going to shift. And it's like, oh, we're going to run out of something. And that's it for scalability, folks.
Well, yeah, and whether it's response time or not, you're looking at some usually a trend over time or a timeline graph of some sort that's sort of showing resource utilization under increasing load. So maybe we should start, if we're going to talk about scalability and estimation, let's start with scalability. And
And James, maybe throw out a definition for how you and I would make sense, define scalability.
Well, Mark, Wikipedia defines scalability as the ability of a system, network, or process to handle a growing amount of work in a capable manner, or its ability to be enlarged to accommodate the growth. As a complement to that, estimation is a rough calculation of the value, number, quantity, or extent of something.
I think there's two words in the scalability definition that I have an issue with. One is a capable manner. To some extent, you and I, when we in the classic era of building systems, which were not very fault tolerant, there was a whole era of zero defect bugs, zero defect software releases. And, you know, there's, as Jerry Weinberg would say, there's no such thing as perfect software and, you know, other myths in the world. Capable manner, I think, is probably a good word because it doesn't say, you know, error-free or failure-free capability. It just says, yeah, it's capable of running the business even if there's errors. I think – I don't know that that has anything to do specifically with scalability, but usually people pay attention when something breaks, like during a stress test or when load goes up. They are not really looking at the curve. They're looking at the emergency that the system is on fire and blowing up in front of them at that point.
True. Very true.
The other point of this that I kind of have an issue with, it's ability to be enlarged. I think that's got to be a very recent thing with elastic systems, either from a virtualization standpoint or from the cloud, because, you know, systems were fairly static. You do your estimations back in the day when it took you 45 days to order the hardware, another 30 days to get it to the loading dock, another week to get the stuff racked, stacked, and plugged in and running, and then deploy the – so you're talking maybe 90 days end-to-end just to enlarge any system, quote unquote. Nowadays, that happens instantly in the cloud, almost automatically if you configure it correctly.
That's true. That's true, Mark. If you design for that capability, the ability to automatically enlarge itself, that is, if you have loose coupling between your tiers of your architecture so that if you have your queues for messages that are growing at a precipitous rate, you can automatically start up another agent, which is a consumer of the queue, and then puts the response back on another queue going back. So you can actually have systems that dynamically expand and dynamically contract according to the load. And I see your point about this issue of accommodate that growth. You know, we're looking at it through the lens of 2014 with, say, Amazon EC2 and the ability to spin up multiple instances and things of that nature. But that can be a little dangerous because, A, if you never shut down the instances, they grow forever and essentially you get really large bills. And I hate to say it, Mark, but really bad developers will consume resources to fill the available resource pool if that's one computer or 4,000.
Yeah. So the one of the first things you can take from the combination of these two definitions, the scalability on one hand, again, the ability of a system to handle growing or progressively more load. And the other idea is that as you're looking at that trend, just like Terry was when we talked with him, he's looking at a graph, that something that moves, right? So some of the latest graphing tools you could see with, well, Graphite, but you could see in AppDynamics, you could see in New Relic, you could see in Dynatrace, any of these graphing tools for monitoring. He was looking probably at CPU, memory heap or something like that, looking at that graph increasing over time, not under necessarily static load. He was looking at sort of the evening shopping increased load over the course of a couple hours. He was looking at an interval. So the estimation was his casual sort of, you know, think of a painter in front of the canvas holding their thumb out and kind of eyeballing, what's that graph line? What's the casual trend line looking at?
Yeah, he's squinting a little bit, and then he's kind of visually drawing that line in his mind out until it just turns red and blows up.
Yeah, and oddly, it's very – we'll talk a little bit about capacity planning, but those two definitions are a great place – to start.
This is a great place to start your journey. By unlocking this door with a key of imagination, Beyond is another dimension, a dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. Mark, you've just crossed into the DevOps zone.
The DevOps zone, exactly. That's wonderful. I mean, what was his?
Rod Serling.
Very funny, too. But to this point, I'll have to say in your journey as a load tester, the reason this is, you know, we bring up this metaphor to go into the Twilight Zone is that this is where things start to get more challenging. When you're just doing a simple load test or a simple stress test, and we talk about different test types and things, but if you're just starting out doing a baseline load test, hey, that's pretty good as a beginner in performance testing. Getting into doing different types of scenarios that allow you to estimate what the future growth is, that you start doing what-if scenarios, running twice the load, three times the load, 10 times the load. This is when your job as a performance tester goes from being sort of reactive checking or validating performance to being influential upstream in different ways. So I think in terms of the real debate is first of all, James, should everyone, in your opinion, should you always be doing scalability and estimation testing? Or when would you best do it, or how do you fit this into your overall strategy?
Now, Mark, I like to say yes, we should all do it. Now, here's the reality. Most of us are working under highly compressed schedules in order to hit a date set by someone who's going to have a bonus if we hit the date or not. And usually that bonus date doesn't allow for this type of testing. However, once we give our qualifier for that to allow the release to go, there's no reason why we can't go back and run these scalability tests to gather additional data points so we can educate operations, we can educate management, we can educate development on things that they can do for the next release or for emergency planning purposes, disaster planning purposes, things of that nature.
Yeah, so you might not do it on every build, on every release, but if there's some significant code churn or some pretty significant changes, maybe you do it every other release, depending on really who the customers are for this kind of test, which is typically a business person. I mean, technically, it's really ops people who are interested in it, but you could also look at this in terms of architecture or platform people, but also the business. Hey, business-wise, did you know we could scale to 3x the load? Which brings me to my next kind of question that often comes up. Remember, James, when we did the speed geeking session and we came up with as many different types of performance tests that we could do in 8 minutes?
Vaguely. I still have sessions with my counselor about that.
Really? I'm sorry. That's right. It's good to admit that it happened before you can sort of move through it and get on with healing. But one of those test types in there I do is an estimation test, or commonly known as a 1x, 2x, 3x test. So if you're putting together in the scheduler, in whatever test tool you have, some kind of ability to ramp up load and then sustain the load. Now, a baseline load test is just going to be flatline. So run 100 threads at 200 transactions per second and let this thing, you know, run for an hour.
And Mark, in contrast to, say, a stress test, which is constantly increasing at a very small step level, this is the type of test where you increase to a platform, hold it for a period, and then ramp up to a new level. So you ramp up to 50%, hold it. Then you ramp up to 100%, then hold it, then 200% and hold it. So you're gathering resource information at each of these levels to help you understand how the system resources are being used and therefore what the curve looks like that you would exhaust them.
Yeah, think of them as bigger stair steps with longer intervals on each step. So the one that I do with my current customer, we call it estimated scalability test. You ramp up for 15 minutes, and then you hold it for 20, 30 minutes at 1x. Then you do the same, another ramp up for 15 minutes, then hold it for 20 or 30 minutes at 2x. So you let the system, as you add more users and you add unique IDs, and you know you have a really good healthy load test design, randomized data, and you're adding more load to the system, the system allow hit a plateau, like James says, and just let it kind of settle out for a while before you really take that measurement towards the end of the interval. You can decide how high you go, right? So you could go 1x, 2x, 3x, and then draw your trend, or 4x, 5x. I do recommend, James, you mentioned sort of going half x, then 1x, then 2x, then something. It should be a fairly linear interval. So if you do half x, I would do half x, 1x, 1.5, 2, 2.5, 3. So make sure it's that you have what should be almost a perfect straight line. Try to avoid a logarithmic kind of change in the intervals. That'll keep the math much more simple. But with that said, if I'm looking at that curve and I'm looking at 1x, 2x, 3x, and I kind of draw almost a straight line on the number of load, let's say it's 100 users, 200 users, 300 users on the system, I think some people might – it might be helpful to talk about what would poor scalability look like. Like what kind of a curve looks like bad scalability in your opinion?
Oh, that's great, Mark. So when you're looking at resource utilization, if the curve of your resource usage is sharper than the curve of the increase in load, so you have a 2x increase in users, but you have a 3x increase in a particular resource, let's say it's CPU in this case, at some point your resource is going to be exhausted before your user is going to be exhausted in that sense. So if you lay one curve over the other and you see that the slope of the resource curve is greater than the slope of the user curve, visually you can say that you have a scalability problem, that you're going to hit your limit due to resources faster than you will, say, your user population. On the other hand, the inverse of that is if visually we look at it, we see that the slope of the curve for users is greater than that of our resource utilization, then we can be pretty confident that our system is going to scale very well. Now, this is never linear. And this is where that whole estimation of putting the two thumbs together and kind of eyeballing it comes into play. At some point, you will hit a knee in the curve. We've all heard of this concept called the hockey stick. We go really, really, really nice and linear and scalable, and then all of a sudden it goes logarithmic because we've hit a point at which there is no more resource available.
You hit 100% memory, 100% CPU, things start to queue. And you know, I think Scott Moore wanted to call it the cankle.
The cankle.
Because it's like the hockey stick is actually more like the cankle. So I'm going to call it the performance cankle. That would be good. So a good example just to sort of throw it out there would be if you're running 10 transactions per second and you see 10% CPU. Then you go to 20 transactions per second and you see 20% CPU. We're probably looking pretty good. I mean, you're chewing up more CPU. You're doing twice the work, twice the CPU. Okay, that's cool. If you get to 30 transactions per second and suddenly you've got 60% CPU.
Exactly.
Now you maybe hit the knee in the curve.
You're with me, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, you could also look at this from a response time standpoint. So a poor scalability curve just on response time, although that's not the end of the story. This kind of testing, you really have to have the physical monitoring in place to do this well, because you're looking at physical scalability characteristics for the most part. But even response time, if you run one thread, one transaction per second, one thread, and it's just repeating, and let's say it has a half a second response time. The minute you run two threads at the same pacing and suddenly the response time doubles and you go to three threads and the response time triples, you're probably looking at some kind of logical code blocking of some sort, either in the database, a query blocking or something, thread blocking, accesses limitation in number of threads or something like that. Something is single threaded. You can, even in like the last episode we did, James, on performance testing and development or performance testing in Agile, these are little itty bitty tests that you can do to get rid of blocking conditions. Blocking conditions can show up really early as super bad scalability, right? Just horrible scalability. But I mostly find them when I'm looking first at, well, let's just see if response time, because if I'm double the users, and it doubles the response time, I know something's goofed up. something's completely goofed up because those transactions can't run in parallel. And that's the first thing. Let's take a quick break from our sponsor. You remember our sponsor, Nuco, right?
Yeah, I like those guys. Hosting for PerfBytes.com has been provided by Nuco, New Centers of Excellence in Performance Engineering, PowerTest Professional Services, The Script Farm, LoadRunner by the Hour, VeteraTech, Cloud Architect, and No Load Test. For more information, go to www.nuco.com or call 703-856-8187.
All right, we're back. We are back, and we're talking about scalability and estimation. Hang on one second. There we go. Scalability and estimation. And we've thus far took a journey to the American Top 40 with Casey Kasem. We've taken a journey into the Twilight Zone on scalability. But we haven't really talked about like estimation. Like why do we do estimation is the biggest question I have, because again, it's not common for people to say, I absolutely need to know, you know, what an estimated scalability number for the future is going to be before I release the software. A lot of performance testers maybe never even get asked to do this kind of test. So why do we do it, James?
Well, Mark, I kind of wish we had our introduction from News of the Damned right here, because understanding what is the scalability of your system and what is the estimated scalability based upon your knowledge of use of the system allows you to set alarms when your system comes under load, and those alarms then allow you to take steps to prevent your site from going down altogether. This is an education opportunity to understand how your system works and to protect your enterprise from disaster.
Yeah. So, and even if you're just doing it based on, well, I'm just estimating that in production, we think the number for the threshold alarm should be 70% CPU or N number of users or transactions per second, whatever it is. I think that I get a lot of questions from folks that are testing in lower environments. A lot of guys are trying to test, you know, and do that mathematical extrapolation, which is evil, by the way, and do that estimation in a sort of a very advanced arithmetic calculation. And that's not what we saw Terry doing. And he has one of the most successful e-commerce websites in the world. And that's not what I find most of the people that are doing this estimation compared to formal capacity planning.
Yeah. And Mark, that's more of what you would call modeling, as opposed to estimation.
Yeah, and I think of high performance, which is now with CA. Modeling for performance is it's a little bit old school. I haven't been asked to do a project like that by ops guys or anything in a very long time, especially with all the innovations for doing actual load testing in production. I remember Bruce at Hyperformix getting on webinars with me and saying, you know, our modeling and our estimations may work just perfectly fine for you, but it's not a replacement for actually putting a real load together and loading a site. I think a lot of ops guys are doing testing in production, testing from the cloud, and doing that under load in production to determine what the real, you know, how high can you go? Well, let's fire up a real load test and we'll tell you how it can really load. To the system, it doesn't know that that's not real web traffic hitting the system. So
that's right. In every model, you have to make some assumptions on how the system is working, particularly if you don't have monitor data to feed it. And it's usually those assumptions at some point will be the root of the failure of the model. The model will scale linearly, whereas in production, the assumption doesn't hold true. And so you need to actually test and then push data back into the model. That's actually a very expensive process. I know some people that spent close to a year building models when it would have been real easy using today's technology to just test in production.
Yeah, just and even if they did it in the lab, they can run an actual load test and tell you what the real number is with no assumptions. The other thing I found with formal capacity planning when you're doing T1, T3, T2, T3, going through the full end-to-end process, which isn't always required nowadays with the sophistication of the models, was that you'd plug in the exact hardware spec in some of these things. High performance is like down to the micro code version of the running in the CPU and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, then you would find out the day you go live that somebody said, well, wait a minute, we got a great deal on this HP Blades. What do you mean you got a great deal? Oh, it was just they gave us this great deal. We saved a bunch of money. I'm like, all right, wait a minute. What did you do? Well, they got half the L2 cache. It's a little bit slower Xeon processor than we had. If you end up going live and you find the model is off, and let's say you're just unlucky and your app totally starves for L2 cache, you are screwed. It's not – if you're in a release cycle, there. I still think you and I would agree, James. There's no replacement for doing real load. I say real load. It could be still obviously simulated from a load tool, but actually put the system under load, measure it, and start getting your graphs together overlaid. And your estimation still, again, remember it's an estimation as you progress in that. So the real idea from an estimation is, though, how is my system going to do – under twice the load? You may never see twice the load or three times the load in production. If you're in e-commerce, maybe around the holidays you see about twice the load, depending on your system. And so you might say, well, what about next year? Maybe next year it's a 10% growth, 20% growth. So these numbers, when you start saying, well, what if the platform sees twice the traffic, three times the traffic, four times the traffic?
Hey, Mark, what if Steve Harvey mentions you on his talk show, or you wind up on Oprah's best things in the universe?
That's a really good question, because I think there's a difference between making sort of a casual trend line to say we can scale to 3x or 4x versus a spike test. And a spike test is a very different kind of point load. And so there, I would recommend you do both. You have a spike test and you have a scalability test. It just so happens your spike might be a spike to 2x, but your scalability test slowly, linearly ramps up from 1x to 2x to 3x. It's the concentration of the allocation phase for the arrival rate, that burst of arrival rate, that's very, very different between those two things. Because if you're going to go to 2x or 3x in 5 minutes versus 15 or 20 or 30 minutes to ramp up, those are very different profiles in terms of caching, in terms of actual allocation of physical resources, and or elasticity. You could spin up stuff pretty fast, but not that fast maybe. At least that's my thought. So I think those are two different things, a scale test and a spike test. But generally the main purpose, the thing you're trying to estimate is, well, can I handle somewhere in the future twice the load, three times the load, four times the load, five times the load? And if you can't actually successfully run five times the traffic on your – let's say you're testing at 50% scale of hardware, 50% of the data, 20% of the data, something like that, your numbers are going to be further and further off. But you've still got to take some guess as to, well, we could probably handle 2x or handle 3x. But don't forget that spike test could come back around and be like, wow, we really need to know that on Friday when we send out the tweet that product X is available, bam, 400 people are going to show up on the site and hammer the site. That's what I have to say, James.
I'm just sitting here listening to you at all, Mark. I just want to give you a little applause on that one.
Okay. So, James, as usual, we try to come back with some of the summary kind of takeaways. What do you have for the first takeaway on scalability and estimation?
For scalability and estimation, Mark, I think we need to start first with get the multiplier effect.
Yeah.
Make sure that you have more than a one-to-one relationship with your customer. That is, you want some customers handled in your CDN, some customers keeping elements in cache on their local machine, so you don't have to have a one-to-one relationship with every customer.
You should be able to handle more than one customer increasingly on the system.
Yes, your system should not scale linearly with every single customer in terms of number of sessions, number of requests.
And that's different than some systems, keep in mind, if you have data isolation, where it's like that person's data has to be on its own machine for other reasons, has nothing to do with performance, could be compliance, regulation, security, could be other reasons that that is true. It should still scale and perform correctly, though. Takeaway number two, and this is something we talked about a little bit, this 1x, 2x, 3x. Plan to add another scenario to all your test runs. You got a baseline load test, maybe you have a stress test, maybe you're even lucky enough to have a spike test, but adding in a stepped test and stepped interval test at 1x, 2x, 3x, that way you will know what will happen at each interval. You can plan for the, you know, the call at 3 a.m. when somebody says, wow, the numbers are going over 3x. We've never tested this high before. We don't know what's going to happen. At least you can start advising people on, well, you should hit an E in the curve in the CPU first. Out of all the resources, that's the first one you're going to hit. So do a scenario that can take 1 to 2 hours, maybe more, 1x, 2x, 3x, maybe 4x in a stepped interval.
Mark, when you talk about takeaways, most performance testers at their core are pattern matchers. We look for bad patterns. We look for good patterns. And in this case, I want you to look for the pattern of an inverse correlation on the metrics for load versus resources. So if you see resources going in opposite directions, you know, one is going up, the other one is not going up as fast, investigate why. And if it's the resource going up faster than the load, that's a bad thing.
Yeah, that's the what bad scalability looks like, as opposed to what does good scalability look like.
Good scalability is the slope of the curve of the users is steeper than the slope of the curve of the resource. And that's whatever resource you're looking at.
Yeah, could be memory, could be network. But if you can get more throughput happening, things don't seem to be slowing down, and the resources are only gradually increasing, that's an effective system. I think tip number four, the takeaway number four, use the data to build that relationship with the ops guys. And I think they're really the first customer in a strategic sense. Release management probably wants to know the baseline load test, soak test, something very simple. But – you know, the spike tests and the crazy outage game day kind of scenario, this 1x, 2x, 3x test, use the data from this stuff so you can tell the ops guys, or the DevOps guys, as it will, that can produce these documents that show the estimations you have. They'll be a good customer. Your second and third customers, second customer is going to be the architecture team or platform architects. The third customer is probably going to be the business people. So if you can tell the business, you know, hey, the system can scale to 3x, they might actually, from a business standpoint, do more promotion, more advertising, hire more salespeople. You never know. So there could be even non-technical financial reasons that you may want to share these kinds of reports and data with the business folks.
And Mark, lastly, remember, it's an estimate. It's not an exact number. Yeah. It's not a precision result. All of those caveats that you hear on pharmaceutical advertisements on the radio, you know, you got the 15, you know, speed 2x, 15 paragraphs of you know, you will grow green hair on the, you know, tops of your toenails and stuff like that.
Only use Perfmira under the prescription and supervision of your physician. Perfmira may cause extreme diarrhea, lasting erections, blindness, hair loss, dementia, directional instability.
Exactly.
Perfmira is not advised for toddlers. Do not use Perfmira if the barometric pressure is greater than 74 degrees on a Saturday afternoon.
Exactly, Mark. You got where I was headed.
Perfmira cannot be used to mow your lawn.
Yo, get your paragraph language down. I do not recommend the language involving an erection or diarrhea. But you know, educate your management who's going to be using this information. Hey, you know, this is kind of rough. It's like drawing a circle on a map instead of putting a pin on it. Yeah. Be very careful.
As James Bach would say, get your safety language together. Put an asterisk. All of these numbers are an estimated trend. The test results may only prove that you can get up to 2x or 3x, but let's say you got twice the hardware. or three times the hardware in production, but you've never really tested it to that level, put a big asterisk on there that says, hey, this is an extrapolated estimation based on the trend. You do the best you can, but you want to make sure you call that out in the overview or the summary of your test results. That's a really important one. I don't like seeing people get fired because they're doing great load testing practices, but they forget a little bit of that safety language.
Yes. We're engineers, not politicians. Borrow a local politician for this language.
Yeah, or call James or I. We'll help you out. We'll write that up there. So hey there, Perf Bites listeners. Once again, you've come to the close of a Ye Wipe. You know what? Ye Wipe, yet another wickedly informative Perf Bites episode.
Wow, that's a monstrous acronym there, Mark.
Ye Wipe. Huh? Doesn't that good? Gotta like that. And special thanks to Casey Kasem and, of course, Rod Serling and The Twilight Zone, because we'd like to thank both of those guys and each of you listeners sincerely for taking the time to listen to the Perf Bites show today.
I would like to give a special shout out to my mother. Thank you once again for tuning in, Mom.
Yes, and I will, of course, always extend my thanks to the sexy Irish voice of Perf Bites, Dr. Martha, the future Dr. Martha, because she's basically cool, and she had a birthday recently. So happy birthday to Dr. Martha.
Anyone else you'd like to thank, Mark?
No, of course not. No, I will give a special thanks to our great sponsors at Flood.io and Cubic Loadpack for their continued sponsorship and support of the Perf Bites show and Perf Bites community. James and I are always open to welcoming new sponsors for even a small amount to help us keep the show going.
Mark, today's episode is powered by the fluorescent safety orange basketball shoes. Mark, they're chick magnets.
I know. It's scary. I don't. Maybe not the kind of chick that I would go for myself, but more power to you. I'm the guy that – I got the yellow pair myself, actually. It doesn't have the same effect. And, of course, everyone, please remember that all the content of this Perf Bites show is copyrighted and protected by a combination of Minwax and Rain-X, which keeps the water out of the microphones when you're recording a Perf Bite after drinking too much single malt scotch. Keep in mind that you don't need to use your wipers in the rain. Like, if you use Rain-X and you use the wipers, that totally screws it up. So you're just wasting your money on the Rain-X. So you have to train yourself not to turn the wipers on when you use Rain-X.
Exactly. For more information about Perf Bites, please visit the show's website, www.perfbites.com, or follow us on the Twitter and the Facebook. And, of course, you can always subscribe and listen on the Perf Bites podcast on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. Just open up your favorite listening app and search for Perf Bites. Click the subscribe button or favorites button or whatever button you have. Just, you know, push it.
Push some kind of a button. The Perf Bites show and staff are supporters of the Practical Performance Analyst, the Performance Engineering Book of Knowledge, the Computer Measurement Group, the Workshop on Performance and Reliability, and, of course, the Software Test Professionals community of software testers. James and I hope to see you at the next STPCon conference, which will be coming up much later this year in November. It's a little late this year. We're going to be in Denver and giving the first, I think we could call it the first mile high live Perf Bites episode in Denver. So that should be very exciting.
That's true, Mark. And as a compliment to that, on July 4th of this year, we're inviting everybody to come to Perf Bites Southern Command in Monroe, North Carolina, and participate in the live broadcast and pig roast. At my place in Monroe. Come on down to my house. If you haven't RSVP'd, please do so through the website. We're hoping for a big crowd.
I think we should call it PerfCon.
PerfCon.
Perf Bites Con. PerfCon. PigCon. PerfCon.
PorkCon.
PorkCon. PerfPorkCon.
PPPCon. Oh, okay, whatever.
That'd be good. Oh, anyway, you're also going to be in HP Discover in June.
There's a rumor about that. I'm kind of playing it by ear, but
okay,
yeah, that'd
be good. But
right
you can
now.
Check out all the LoadRunner world of very great people. Scott Moore is going to be out there, I believe.
I think he's required to be there, yes.
Of course, for me, I'm on hiatus for the summer, pretty much. A few meetups here and there, doing some stuff in Philadelphia. And, of course, some online training throughout the rest of the year. But, pretty much just hanging out, enjoying that. And I'll see you guys at the 4th of July pig roast. It should be really awesome. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you on the next episode of Perf Bites.
Have a great week, everyone.